Slate's XX GabFest is sponsored by The Great Courses, offering engaging audio and video lectures taught by top professors. Courses like Fundamentals of Photography. Right now, get 80% off the original price when you visit thegreatcourses.com/XX.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to the XX GabFest for Thursday, April 2nd, Monica Makes a Joke edition. I'm Hannah Rosen, a writer at Slate. I'm joined in the New York studios by June Thomas, editor of Outward, Slate's LGBTQ blog. Hi, June.
Hey, Hannah.
And Noreen Malone of New York Magazine. Hi, Noreen.
Hi.
Let's jump right in. Our three topics for today. First, Monica Lewinsky. She's back talking about her last 20 years. Does she make a good spokesperson for cyberbullying? And why now, just when Hillary is about to run? Second, is flawless our new feminist term? It seems like just another beauty standard, but a writer at the New York Times argues that it perfectly captures this feminist moment. And third, is calling someone a cat lady sexist? A conversation that I imagine will just devolve into a debate about whether cats are awesome.
They are.
Or annoying.
Yeah.
Annoying.
Annoying.
Annoying. And you can already see what the sides are going to be. All right. Before we get going, I just want to say that you should all go watch the premiere of Mad Men with Slate's TV Club. I'm actually going to do the TV Club this year. This event is free. Julia Turner, John Swansburg, and a special guest from the Mad Men TV Club is going to be there. It's happening Sunday, April 5th at the Bell House in Brooklyn. Doors open at 9 p.m. for general admission, but Slate Plus members get early access at 8. Special happy hour with preferred seating. Are either of you going to be there?
I don't know if I'm a special guest, but I am actually going to be part of the discussion after the premiere. So, yes,
woo-hoo!
I will be there.
I hear you have a 3-episode arc this season. You know?
That's right. Yeah. I can't give anything away, but my goodness, I just hope I've got all of my bits left at the end.
All of your bits. Anyway, go to slate.com/madmen. That's slate.com/madmen to RSVP. But it's free. Remember, it's free. Okay, let's jump in with Monica. Monica Lewinsky just gave a TED Talk in which she referred to herself as patient zero for a kind of viral internet humiliation, which has now become commonplace. She talked about the last 20 years of her life, how hard it's been for her to date and get a job. And then she called for a cultural revolution. Does every TED Talk end in a cultural revolution? In internet culture, public shaming has become a blood sport, she said, and it's time to stop. So before we talk about that, let's just listen to a little clip from the beginning of her TED Talk when Monica makes a joke.
At the age of 41, I was hit on by a 27-year-old guy. I know, right? He was charming and I was flattered and I declined. You know what his unsuccessful pickup line was? He could make me feel 22 again.
So she opens the Vanity Fair piece talking about how someone asked her in a room how it felt to be America's blowjob queen, which is horrible. Like, it really just gives you a sense of how horrible her life has been for the last 20 years. Were you guys moved or were you rolling your eyes?
I have to say that I did end up rolling my eyes so much that I worry that I might have damaged my already terrible vision, because
oh,
I have been really sympathetic to Monica since whatever we call that whole series of events. I've managed to block it from my head. But there's both the Vanity Fair piece that she was nominated for a National Magazine Award for, which was a terrible bloody piece. All it did was talk, was like throw out little things that she then said nothing about. All the things I wanted to know about, she didn't say anything. And what was with that long like excerpt from a piece, an ancient Observer piece, which did reveal a lot of horrible cattiness from certain famous feminists. But what? That had nothing to do with anything. It was just... And then the TED Talk, which I'm sorry, TED Talks, Jesus Christ. But the sort of the whole, like, the over-rehearsedness of it, the whole... Which I know is part of the TED Talk vibe, yes. But just everything, there was like a... And then the piece in the style section of the New York Times, there was this... I'm driving
you
Hannah
are
crazy.
So mean.
No, I'm not mean. It's just like there. I believe that those pieces, in a way, were exploiting her because I mean, okay, we'll leave the TED Talk aside. That's for we'll consider that separately. But those pieces, to me, were a passive aggressive way of making it seem like, oh, they're very sympathetic to Monica, but actually by setting up questions and then not answering them, all I could think of was, well, okay, so she says she's had trouble getting a job. How come she has three homes, like in a that cover a space of 6,000 miles? How can she? I can barely afford to like ride the subway. How is she like riding from New York to LA to London?
And well, the asides were funny, where it was like, because she's been friends with Graydon Carter, the editor of Vanity Fair, for 20 years, and Norman Mailer, who comes to her house for dinner, you know, before he whatever. Like, there was weird asides that made it seem like, you know, like Salman Rushdie or something. She's kind of was in hiding, but also going to every party. Yeah. But you weren't moved at all by this, you know, it seems she's got something to say. I'm not saying she has something to say about the issues, and I want to move to those when we talk about the TED Talk. But, you know, it's been 20 years of being Monica Lewinsky. Like, I was just interested in the experience of dating as Monica Lewinsky, or going to a job interview in which someone asks you, you know, how would you package your brand? And she's like, I'm Monica Lewinsky. Like, I really have to package my brand. You didn't find any of that interesting?
No.
Like, what her life has been like for 20 years?
Yes, that's the thing, though. I am interested. And these pieces did not answer the questions that I had. So she talks about going on a date, and then she just throws out this thing that the guy she was on a date with was in a green card marriage. What? Or she goes to a job interview and they want a letter of indemnification from the Clintons. You're like, what? But then she doesn't say anything. Like, well, what the hell are you talking about?
Okay, but of all people in the world, does Monica not deserve a right to controlled public revelation? Like, she's not going to be a person who gives true confessions. Like, all her whole narrative of her life is that the spilling of my inside guts ruined me. She's not going to do it again.
Yeah.
Like, that whole part where she talks about having to listen to the Linda Tripp tapes, you know, and having to hear the worst side of yourself prattle on, and then having it go to like a freaking congressional investigation. That is like my worst nightmare. Imagine like somebody recorded your shitty conversation with some woman, and then
like this,
like this, like this podcast right now. And then, you know, everybody in the world like read it in a transcript. It's
absolutely. As I say, I've always been really sympathetic to Monica. There are certain things that about her life that are just innately sympathy building. However, and it is the fact that she has been quiet for like 20 years and she has, you know, preserved this kind of dignity. And now it's like she's doing a semi-striptease. Like, you can either stay fully clothed, but don't pull down, like, just don't pull down your sweater from your shoulder.
I think she was wearing a blue dress. She was clothed.
Right. You know, don't just kind of unzip the blue dress, like keep it on, or, you know, but to me, this sort of semi-revelation and just saying like my work life, my dating life have been terrible. That's basically all she said. Like, I could have imagined that.
Okay. I have a theory about why now.
Okay.
Because I actually, like a year or two ago, whenever the Sydney Leather scandal happened, remember Sydney Leather?
Remind me when that...
I think she was Anthony Weiner's.
Oh. Yes.
But she did like porn. Mm. She, you know, she just was sort of the worst nightmare for a mistress. I actually wrote a piece being like, in defense of Monica Lewinsky. Like, America didn't know how good we had it. Like, this was a mistress with dignity, you know? And then a year later, she's on the TED Talk circuit, which... You know, it's a lot more
dignified.
Sydney
Leathers was?
No. Oh my God. Sydney Leathers' TED Talk? That is a thing to imagine.
See, then I would watch. Okay.
I'm sure there is like a TEDx porn, or maybe that's
there is a TEDx porn.
Is there?
There's a TEDx prison. There's a TEDx like vagina. I mean, there's TEDx everything. Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that Monica Lewinsky, or whoever is advising Monica Lewinsky, sort of very, I mean, first of all, her hand was forced in a way because Hillary Clinton's running for president, right? So,
So why was it forced?
Because her name is going to come up. It's just, she's going to be out there again, you know? So that's one reason why she might have chosen now. The other reason, my theory goes, is that she or her handlers have decided that the sort of feminist moment has shifted, and there's sort of something going on in feminism now where there is a sisterhood around victimhood. Mm-hmm. And instead of being seen as this like dumb seductress, Monica is a victim now, and that people are rallying around her. You know, the woman who wrote the style section profile, which was really the first access she's given a journalist, works for Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In Foundation and is very involved in, you know, that kind of feminism. I don't think that was an accident at all.
I think you're so write about that. When I was writing about the Hillary scandals and read the way women and feminists talk about, you know, Paula Jones and Monica Lewinsky, it's like I gasped. We would never, you know how we're always nervous to say anything on the podcast that might offend someone? It's like that. Like we would, nobody would ever publicly talk about the victims of harassment the way people talked about the sort of string of Clinton mistresses and alleged mistresses now. So I think you're totally right about that.
Well, I'm Maureen Dowd's columns. I mean, when you know, that was another reason that it was so peculiar of Monica to, you know, pick out that weird, you know, Observer piece about a random gathering, because so much more high profile people who were actually writing and not just talking off the cuff just were horrible to her and, you know, ridiculously sexist, too.
So, okay, so that she had me with her life story. She had me with the sexism and then and how the feminists treat her back in the day. And she does that whole riff about Erica Jong and Katie Royfe and everybody who's talking about her like she's a little slut. And then comes the turn, and the turn happens around Tyler Clemente, the turn into her big TED Talk-y issue.
Right.
Cyberbullying and everything. And this is where she loses me.
Yeah.
And I can explain why. But what would you, are you guys with me so far?
You were with you, but now with Monica.
Yeah. Not with Monica. Okay. And I think for me, it's like a kind of a technical thing. I mean, I hate all that TED Talk, compassion, empathy, like, thanks for telling us we need compassion and empathy. But it's more that like, she's not a private person like Tyler Clemente. She got kind of swept up in a giant public scandal, which became the center point of a hearings and investigations. And so there kind of isn't an expectation of privacy when that happens. Tyler Clemente is like a guy in his dorm room and his shitty roommate releases this video. It's a totally different circumstance.
I did find it moving that it was sort of her mother's emotion that she was casting.
Yes.
You know, her mother saw this connection that Monica herself didn't feel immediately. And seeing the way her mother saw her was sort of like the moment where she was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I believed that and I sort of found that emotionally compelling. But then to sort of pivot and, you know, make it the centerpiece of your own campaign about bullying, that's where to me it was like a little bit of a stretch.
Exactly. I feel exactly the same way. And I have to say that to be fair, you know, seeing all of this coverage did make me, as a writer or a journalist, sort of just have that moment of thinking, you know, when you write about real people, you are, you know, putting them in a spotlight, you're drawing attention to them. Just, you know, think about that, which is certainly not the first time I've had that thought. But, you know, seeing the pain that even revealing the truth can cause is, you know, useful, I think. But that, then that pivot is too far.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm backtracking now, but I do have to say, like, the gap, she did convince me also that the gap between her public image and her actual self, like, there was a line in the Vanity Fair piece where she said, you know, people called her a stupid bimbo, and she's like, how do you know I'm stupid? My first job out of college was at the White House, you know?
Yeah.
So there was this thing where, like, she was just, like, an ambitious, you know, striver. She's like Tracy Flickish, right? Like, she's very ambitious. She wasn't, mm-hmm. like, a stupid bimbo, so.
Can I just say my favorite piece of coverage that came out of this most recent round of Monica Dumb was in her TED Talk. She says, oh, I'm in over 40 rap songs. And The Cut, New York Magazine's The Cut, actually fact checked that and partnered with Rap Genius. And they found that it's more like 140 rap songs.
Whoa.
And they found them all. But and most of them are just using Monica as like a synonym for blowjob or whatever. But the most interesting thing was that Nicki Minaj used the name Monica Lewinsky as like a symbol of power, uh-huh. in a way that no one else did. Everyone else did it as like a toss-off sexual thing, but Nicki Minaj like sees Monica as this like powerful being in a way that Monica is not framing herself as a powerful being. She's like, you know, Monica's Vanity Fair piece is called Shame and Survival, and Nicki Minaj is rapping about how like awesome it is to be the person who can seduce the leader of the free world. And I just thought that was so great.
That's fantastic.
More reasons to love Nicki. What we do on this podcast. Well, actually, that is a good transition to my final twist on this, which is that ironically, Hillary, at the same moment Monica's coming out, Hillary Clinton is packaging herself as a kind of victim slash triumph of a bullying moment. And it also involves her mother. And I thought that was really interesting, which is that in her very last paid speech, which everyone reported in the papers as the speech where she was, now we're in a Saturday Night Live skit, most relatable. that, you know, she had an altercation with the girl across the street and her siblings. And then she came running back into her house for shelter with her mom. And then her mother at the door, it says, told her flatly, there's no room for cowards in this house. What do you guys make of what? Why is Hillary packaging herself as that? Like, it's relatable because her mom's in the story. She has a mom, right? So is the way Hillary's always trying to remind us that she's a person too. And like, she is tough. Like, what exactly is in? Is it like tender tough that she's trying to convey in that story? I just found it interesting that both she and Monica were kind of walking the same narrative in slightly different ways.
I mean, Hillary has a problem with this. I mean, where in a way she could have pictured herself as the victim of the affair between Bill and Monica, which, you know, Monica is always very careful to say it was consensual, even though there are lots of issues around that because she was, you know, there was a, such a different power dynamic. So I don't know if it's just about kind of reminding us that when she finds herself betrayed or, you know, in trouble, she fights back. I don't know. But I mean, it just feels like a very different sort of situation, too, because another thing that's interesting about this whole Monica thing is that by choosing a TED Talk, and that New York Times style section was like, once you've watched the TED Talk, since it's all about rehearsing a TED Talk, it loses kind of a lot of its interest. You know, the whole thing of a TED Talk is you are completely in control. You shape that narrative. Like, there's no questions and answers, and you've rehearsed it to a fairly well, which I find very off-putting when you're trying to just, like, say something about yourself and something that's a big news story. Whereas Hillary is in a situation where she's, yeah, politicians are constantly trying to shape the narrative, but it's a struggle. You know, you're pushing that, but meanwhile, you can't control what people are writing. You have to take questions, all of those things. So it's such a different situation for me.
I'm still stuck on the fact that Hillary thinks her mom speaks in, like, bad stage dialogue. There's no way for cowards in this house. Like, act three. Like, what the hell?
That's awesome. I didn't even pick up on that. All right. Well, June's not giving any TED Talks anytime soon.
You've given one, right?
I'm so embarrassed to say that I have. Yes, I did give a TED Talk.
Hannah, it comes up on the page when you search, like, feminist TED Talks. I was doing that to see, like, where Monica's would land, and yours was right up there.
Awesome. Me with that stupid mic in my ear. Stop it. Don't look at that picture. Anyway, okay, well, let's move on to our second topic. It's flawless, the new feminist term, but before we do that, we would like to thank our sponsor, Great Courses. I am an amateur photographer. I've always wanted to be a much better photographer. So we watched a series called The Fundamentals of Photography. It was taught by National Geographic photographer Joel Sartori, and it was fantastic. He speaks clearly. He gives you lots of tips on all kinds of things that I had never quite figured out because I was taking all photographs the same way. But he tells you, you know, what to do if you're taking a portrait, what to do if you're doing nature photography. And it's very basic stuff and also much more sophisticated stuff if you want to go there with him. The Great Courses are celebrating their 25th anniversary. You can get over 500 courses, including history, science, literature, psychology, and better living. They're taught by top professors and experts, and you can watch them in all sorts of ways with a DVD, a CD, you can stream them, digital downloads, or with the Great Courses app. Great Courses is doing a special limited time offer for XX listeners, and it's a really, really great offer. You get up to 80% off the original price if you order from 8 of their best-selling courses, including the Fundamentals of Photography. So go to greatcourses.com/XX. That's greatcourses.com/XX. Let's move on to our second topic. In a recent New York Times essay, Parul Sehgal calls the word flawless our first untroubled word for human beauty, free of the whiff of sexism that clings to many others. It's the title of Beyoncé's song, but it's also a word that's been used to describe Rihanna, outfits, best friends. She links to all sorts of examples of what we now call flawless. The word refers to appearances, but not in the usual way of pretty. It means something more like outfitted with armor against criticism. Are you guys flawless?
I woke up like this.
You woke up like this? Okay, cool. But that's ironic when in the Beyoncé song she says, I woke up like this. We know she didn't wake up like that, right?
Well, but that to me, that's part of the whole, you know, issue with flawless. I mean, and Parul Sehgal's essay kind of had this problem where it starts off as being, what was the phrase, our first untroubled word for human beauty, which is a very nice point. But then by the end of the essay, we are talking about something else, which is a more natural form of beauty and a sort of unconstructed version of it. And I do think, yes, it's Beyoncé, so it is ironic. But there is, you know, especially in the video for Flawless, there is a sort of a praising, a lauding of a more natural look, of a kind of IDGAF, you know, of kind of getting down with your buddies and like dancing wildly and, you know, just bow down bitches, you know, like just take, you know, handle me.
But what's your point there, that it's not actually, that there's a tension between the natural, I woke up like this, and the constructed? Like, isn't that intentional? I mean, I loved Perul's point that actually it rewards effort, that it's not actually about waking up like this. Well, but it rewards, like, you look good, girlfriend, because you worked it, not like you are beautiful. Like, you just happen to be beautiful and so lucky for you and I hate you. It's this idea that it's accessible to anyone, which I love. Like, it doesn't... So it's some weird combination of like your natural, like you look how you look and then you make the best of what you look like.
I'm not sure that's what the essay says. I think the first part of the essay says that, but then I think the essay goes in another direction. And I have to be honest with you, there was something about this essay that I believe I had a sexist reaction to it. To me, this was a very kind of girly essay in the sense that it was so polished and so flawless that I actually was craving just like a little bit more of a rough edge, a little bit more like less perfection. And to me, it did kind of bring up this kind of end of men feelings of this was an essay that I would have had no doubt was written by a woman.
Well, I think she is a beautiful writer.
Yeah.
And this piece was full of logical inconsistencies.
Exactly.
So first of all, flawless is our first untroubled word for human beauty. It's just an incorrect statement, because flawless is an incredibly complicated term for human beauty. It's saying that, you know, something is not beautiful unless it's without flaws, right? Like that. And then the idea that you are going to like put on this armor to make yourself beautiful. And even if it's something you've done on your own, it's still like acknowledging the flaws that you are like working so hard to cover up. I actually think beauty is a pretty untroubled word for human beauty. There's no normative definition associated with beauty. It's, you know, that old phrase. It's in the eye of the beholder. I couldn't follow her from there. It sort of leapt from that to then making this argument about that flawless is this earnest thing, except it isn't. I feel like people use it ironically all the time, but she was making this argument that it's earnest, sort of feminist expression. I just feel like she didn't quite have a handle on what she was arguing. And I also have always been puzzled by this, like, I woke up like this thing, in part because it straddles the line between irony and earnestness in a way that, like, I don't know. I think it's just tough.
Yeah, I mean, but don't you think that is what Beyoncé is? Like, if you look at that video, Beyoncé is not, you know, a rude boy from London. Beyoncé is not actually a punk rocker. She would never leave the house dressed the way she's dressed in that video, probably even to throw away the garbage, right?
Mm-hmm. So like, I don't feel that. I don't feel that at all. I mean, I think Beyoncé, the person as well as the character that she's playing in that video, is having a good time in that video. I don't sort of.
Beyonce's never having a good time like Rihanna's having a good time. She's always like having a constructed good time. Even in that amazing video where she's out on the balcony, I can't remember which song it is, but she's
like, 7-Eleven. Great.
Yeah,
song.
Yeah, okay. Right. So that's a great video, right? But like everything with Beyonce is simultaneously wild and utterly constructed. Like simultaneously like completely animal sexuality that's also been choreographed to death. Like that is what Beyonce is.
That's pop music. I mean, she's not the second coming. I mean, she's a very good example of what she does. But, you know, the album version of the song also has the, you know, the bit from Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. And can we play that clip? I mean, it's a very earnest cut from a TED Talk, and that was apparently discovered by Beyoncé and incorporated into the song and the video. And I think there's no doubt that changes the irony earnestness balance.
We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition, but not too much. You should aim to be successful, but not too successful. Otherwise, you will threaten the man.
okay, so this song is the remix of the original. Uh-huh. And the original song was Bow Down Bitches, which I actually loved. I think it's like a great song, just like pure expression of female like competitiveness and aggressiveness and like own my turf. But she got in trouble on the internet for being like unkind to fellow women and calling them bitches. And so then the remix comes out and it's got like a TED Talk spliced in and it's got this argument about Flawless. And I feel like it's just a reaction. I love that song, but I think that it's a packaged version of feminism.
Have you ever said bow down bitches to any bitches? I'm just curious if people say that.
No, that would be,
that would be kind crazy.
I'm going to say it's at the Mad Men TV Club event on Sunday.
And then only the women are going to bow. So the thing I liked about bow down bitches too. Here's one argument that Perul makes, which I really like, is she says, you know, that usually Flawless, it refers to execution. Like she gives the example of Babe Ruth's swing, right? And I feel like there is a way in which men can admire someone for something they do excellently, like mm-hmm. athletes, you know? And women don't exactly have that equivalent. You know, you say she's pretty or she's beautiful and it's just like how she is. But that's, I mean, that's what I love about the Flawless and Bow Down Bitches. Like she starts the song by saying, you know, you want to grow up to be in my world. So it's like, I have worked and worked and worked like Babe Ruth to become this person, and now you want to be there, so bow down, bitches. And that's fine. It's like it's like women have a hierarchy, like men have a hierarchy, and it's not a hierarchy based on, you know, richness or birth. It's based on work.
Well,
and I
except,
like that.
Except I'm not sure that that is the Babe Ruth lesson. I mean, I think there is this very complicated thing, you know, especially for men around sports, where it's often race coded that, you know, we talk about natural athletes who we admire, and then there are athletes who work hard, and sometimes you say good things about them because, okay, they don't have that natural talent, but they work. Well, everybody works hard, and everybody, you know, to a certain extent has talent. So it's like, to me, that's also a little muddy as well. Babe Ruth was notably a very natural athlete, could both swing and and bowl.
Probably a good bowler, right? Honestly.
Right. And pitch. But still, that also, yeah, sorry, it's been the Cricket World Cup. Come on.
I know. I'm not getting any sleep.
But still, like, that also is a little muddy around flawlessness.
Well, why can't we just say she's masterful, you know? She's really mastered the art of, like, getting that strong brow like Rihanna or whatever it is we're complimenting.
Because you can't sing masterful. I'm masterful.
No, I mean, listen, again, great song. I just take issue with the idea that flawless is, like, connoting with this. I say arguing it's connoting. I just think, like, if you want to argue that someone is in command of herself and her appearance, I endorse that. I just am not sure that the word flawless is actually doing that. I think flawless is a reaction, like, right? Being in control of a situation, you're not reacting to what others perceive as your flaws. And I think flawless you are.
So I thought it was interesting that she brought in Flawless Sabrina, who was a crossdresser, who I guess popularized the term flawless, because that makes it just completely obvious and explicit that it's about a performance of gender, about something that you put on and do and work really hard at, as opposed to something you just have.
Well, it certainly can be. I mean, and Flawless Sabrina was, and still is actually, a very influential drag queen. In fact, our own Brian Lauder, who works on Outward, he has a photo of Flawless Sabrina on his desk. But, you know, that's one version. I don't think, are we saying that all femininity is performed?
Well, and also we don't celebrate men for performing their masculinity. I mean, we do, I guess, but not explicitly.
Yeah. Yes, we do. I don't want to talk to you guys anymore about this. Okay.
Hannah Rosen, retreat wrong on the issues.
Retreat to your cat.
Retreat to my cats.
You're going
to
be wrong on this too. My God.
I know. I'm wrong on everything today. Cat ladies. Let's move on to cat ladies. We seem unable to contemplate the thought of a woman enjoying the sweet company of a cat without assuming it's a hallmark of a sad, single existence, writes Julia Baird in a New York Times essay that was on the most read and most emailed forever, as all cat pieces in respectable outlets are. The words associated with cat lady, she says, are lame, forever alone, spinster, ice cream, and smelly, whereas a man and his dog are icons of independence, freedom, and adventure. as they should be, says Hannah. This, despite research showing that cat owners are less lonely, fitter, happier, live longer, etc. Also, she makes the argument that cats are the paragon of modern femininity because they don't need a man or anyone, for that matter. They are gloriously indifferent. And that's why they suck, says Hannah. No, sorry. Okay, this is not a – I'm not biased here at all. I'm completely neutral. Who's a cat owner here?
Me.
I am definitely not.
Did you grow up with cats?
No pets allowed in the Malone household.
Mm. Oh, because too many children?
Exactly. Six kids. My mom didn't want to take care of anything else.
Yes, David, my husband David, has a five living creature – no, he has a seven living creatures under a roof rule. Because some of us in the house kind of want a dog, but we're at seven because we're five plus two cats. So I'm trying to kill the cat, but I don't know how to do it without being found out. So
my cat is nearly 20 years old. And I tell you, I would rather be with my cat than just about any human being.
I hope your lady's listening.
You're blowing up those cats.
I said almost.
Okay, so before we get into the dog cat fight right away, what did you guys think about? Were you convinced that cat lady is bandied about as a sexist term? Like, can you imagine a cat man? Like, you know, is it always that cat lady is the butt of all spinster jokes?
It's totally sexist. Yeah. I see this as a person who dislikes cats and has avoided them, you know. But it is a completely sexist way to tag a woman or a single woman or any, you know, person who's really into their pet.
And it is completely gendered, too, because there's also a weird attitude about male cat owners. I remember a friend dating a male cat owner and being like, is he really straight? Like, it's and there's no reason. Like, it's just silly. But we are so convinced that cats are a signal of sort of sad femininity that we even are a little bit suspicious of men who love felines.
I wonder if there's a manly cat. Like, if you're just a dude, you know, you don't want to be tagged as feminine because I don't know why you're dating or you just don't want to. But you love cats. If there's like a breed of cat you can get that says man.
Well, how would you know? Because it's not like, you know, a dog is much more sort of you parade your tastes. You parade your like, hey, I got a really big dog. Or like,
you know what that means?
Yeah.
Big apartment.
Exactly. Backyard. Or you have a little tiny girly dog and you're basically saying, I am so confident in my sexuality. You know, like everything is signaling. Whereas with cats, there's no signaling because they're in your apartment. You're not really showing them off. You're basically just saying, I've got a cat.
Know this, ladies. I've got a cat.
Yeah, ladies, got a cat.
But what is it about cats that we find so spinsterly, right? Is it so I could very well, I am a single woman with a job that I spend a lot of time at. Mm-hmm. I could own a cat.
Right.
Like, cats are sort of like a self-cleaning oven, you know? It's just like, you
put not up... when they get to 20, believe me.
Okay, my image of cats is that you have to be home every 24 hours to put out some food. And, you know, sometimes they curl up next to you, sometimes they don't. And that's, you know, the ball game. So I wouldn't have to change anything about my lifestyle to have a cat. To have a dog, I would have to have so much leisure time. I would have to have more space. I would have to have money to pay a dog walker. I think there's like something aspirational, at least, you know, in a big city about dog ownership, whereas cat ownership is like, you know, you can do it just by yourself and watch Netflix.
There's also the domesticity. Mm-hmm. So cats, you know, it's like the classic male-female divide, like male in the public sphere, woman in the private sphere. You know, a cat implies that you are at home, you know, that you're attending the home, whereas a dog implies that you're out and about, as you say.
Yeah. And I think cats are cheaper, I mean, on the whole. And there was a piece in Slate some years ago, you know, I think the title was, So What's With Cat Ladies? And it's true that animal hoarders tend to be women and the animals that they hoard tend to be cats. And it is...
I love how Jim's like putting on like neutral newscaster voice.
And it is.
Are there so many animal hoarders that we have stats on it?
There are thousands.
Of cats or hoarders?
Both, probably.
I mean, wait, but don't women hoard like I have a female neighbor who does that pet rescue stuff, you know, where
exactly.
She's like always boarding dogs and stuff because they're fostered and been abused or like there is that phenomenon
yeah.
too, right?
And well, apparently part of animal hoarding is a kind of mental illness and often people believe that they're helping the animals. And in a sense, they are, because often they are rescuing them. But typically, when you are going over a certain number of animals in your home, you aren't able to take care of them and you're actually endangering them. So it becomes a little dangerous at the extremes.
Well, don't your cats make you crazy? Isn't that the this controversial new research that, is it your cat bites, June? You'll have to tell me. But they sort of get in your bloodstream and like...
Cat scratch fever? I don't know. Here's the thing. I think at base, there is something really comforting about looking after something. And it's good for you. It's good for them, as long as you don't go onto the crazy animal hoarding side of things. But if you are lonely, you can go to a shelter or a friend will give you a cat and you have a creature, you know, a living being to take care of and who will be company. And you can't go to a shelter and find a partner of whichever sex you prefer. So it
is actually a new app. You can just go to a shelter, just find someone.
Yeah, exactly. And so, there is something really...
It's like Tinder and shelter.
I think it would be called litter.
Give me shelter.
So, you know, it is really nice to have something in somebody. Like, my cat really is my best friend. It's like, I love being with my cat. She makes
June,
feel good. Yes.
I totally get that. Like, yes. I totally get the animal. It takes me a long time, but I get the kind of bonding with the animal. And I grew up with dogs, and then my daughter wanted cats, so we got cats. But the question is, to me, having a cat is like being stuck in the infant phase of child rearing, where you get so little back. It's like, I have to take care of this creature and feed this creature all the time. And I'm like waiting for the moment when the creature like smiles or talks to me. And that's when the cat becomes a dog. You have a child. It's like fun. So like, what is the appeal, the mystery of the cat, or like that just that it's, you know, because I have great cats as cats go. They sit on your lap. They're not that annoying. You know, they don't puke that much all over the house, whatever. They're less smelly than dogs. I mean, my cats have a lot going for them, but I just don't feel like I get a lot from them.
No. I mean, they're cats. And if you think you're not getting, if you think they're like infants, no, just wait till they get to be 20. And every day you have to like think, has she gone? You know, has she?
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
No, I don't mean like that. I mean, has she done her numbers?
Oh.
Like, I swear.
I thought you meant as the cat died.
Well, I do worry about that every morning. But I mean, my partner and I do have these conversations every day about like, has she done a number one? Has she done a number two? Has she, like, it's ridiculous. It's like having an infant. But
that's so sexy.
Okay. Okay. But what about the current movement to like reclaim cat ladydom among sort of like cool young celebrities?
Are you talking about
like Taylor Swift?
Yes. Taylor Swift also in my Instagram feed full of like young ladies in New York who have, you know, sort of cool jobs. Everyone's got a fucking cat.
Really? Is it supposed to be, do you do sexy posing with your cat? Or is
no,
it
people just like take pictures
cool.
of their cats and I scroll on by without, you know, like liking that because that
so
does
cats
not...
are the new sunset.
Yeah, basically. It's like people, I think there is, you know, cats are aesthetically pleasing in a way that I think women appreciate. And so they're like close-up beauty shots of people's like furry, expensive cats. And just, I don't know.
So this is like how books became an accessory, like you color code your books. Now you have a cat which matches your decor.
Yeah, everything's an accessory now, I guess.
I have to say that nothing makes me... It's not just that Taylor Swift has cats. That's great. But the fact that she named them Meredith Grey and Olivia Benson. Olivia Benson! I mean...
Wait, who is Olivia?
Olivia Benson is Mariska Hargitay's character from Law & Order SVU. Oh. Nothing makes me bond with Taylor Swift more than Olivia Benson. Like... I might just buy her album just to support it because I hear she needs the money. It's like, Taylor, right on.
All right, let's end there with Taylor, right on. Oh, boy. Okay, recommendations. Noreen, what do you have for us?
Well, I have two. One is New York City specific, so I'll do a second one apologetically because of that. I went to go see The Heidi Chronicles, the play on Broadway by Wendy Wasserstein.
I so want to see that.
I had never seen it. I'd never read it. And it's just a very funny, I found it a very affecting play. So if you get a chance and you're in New York City, you should go see it. Or if you're not, I think you can buy and read the play, you know, online.
My mom saw it with David.
Oh, really?
My husband, yes.
What did they think?
They liked it. She liked it.
Cool. And then my second recommendation is a book that's out, I believe, next week by Heidi Julowitz. It's called The Folded Clock. And it's a memoir that's told in kind of a fake diary style, which has not traditionally been a format I've been into. I couldn't finish Sheila Hetty's book, have no desire to pick up Karl Ove Knausgård's book. But this was just really an absorbing chronicle of her life. She's a woman in her mid-40s who has two kids, and she writes about that, but she also has a very glamorous life, and she's a very thoughtful, thoughtful person. And so it's just like a series of mini essays about daily life that all sort of come to a surprising or affecting twist at the end. And I can't recommend it highly enough.
Sounds great. I am recommending How to Be Both by Allie Smith, which we are actually going to talk about in the audio book club shortly on Slate. It's such an interesting book. It's two interwoven stories, and it's very narratively complex, and it takes a while to kind of understand what's going on. And I had a funny experience. So two versions of this book have been released, which have different beginnings.
Whoa.
And I had like read a review sort of idly a while back, and I knew how it began, but mine didn't begin that way. So I thought, I was like, did I get some weird bootleg copy from China or something? Like, why isn't the beginning the beginning? And then I finally figured out that there are two beginnings, but it's a really great book.
Wow.
June.
So I also have something that involves interlocking stories and also something that isn't quite available just yet. But starting on April 13th, so before our next episode, Logo is premiering Cucumber and Banana, which are two shows by Russell T. Davis, who created the original British Queer as Folk and a fantastic and little seen show called Bob and Rose, and also revived Doctor Who. And all of those shows except for Doctor Who are set in Manchester, as are Cucumber and Banana. So Cucumber is the story of a middle-aged couple who have, in the first episode, like, you can't, so much disaster happens. Their 9-year relationship is just pretty much blown up, as I understand it, having only seen two episodes. The rest of the 8-episode season is about kind of the fallout and kind of patching things together, perhaps. And then Banana is a half-hour series that is more about young people who kind of gravitate or are in the kind of orbit of the middle-aged people who are at the center of Cucumber. But there are some like really fun ways where the two stories intersect. And it's just brilliantly written. And in Banana, you feel like characters from a novel have walked off and are having their own adventures in a short story. And I just think it's beautiful because it's set in Manchester, of course. It's gritty, and I just can't recommend it highly enough. I've only seen two episodes of each, and I cannot wait to see the rest.
I wish I said anything as beautifully as you say the word banana.
I was going to say, I was like, I'm going to watch it without saying anything so that every time I see June, I can be like, so how, the show is great. And she'll say, you mean banana?
You know what's funny? When we go to England, and Rosemary always will be like, I think I'll just have a banana. And all my English friends say, you're just going to have a banana? It's one of those words.
Yeah.
This is like that scene in Love Actually where the guy from Wisconsin, like, he goes over to...
I do not understand. Why do people like that movie? It's the worst movie ever, and it is so anti-American. Oh,
I love
God.
That movie so much. I really love it. It's one of my deep loves, that movie. And we'll have to fight about that.
We're
time.
Having, like, such a Jack Spratt day today.
We really are. June, there's something we want our listeners to pay attention to for an upcoming show.
That's right. So the series Outlander returns to Stars on Saturday, the 5th of April. And it is, to me, seems like a really interesting show set explicitly from a woman's point of view. It's a time travel sort of action story with lots of men in kilts and some very sort of adult and kind of kinky sexual stuff in it too. And it's a very sexual show from a woman's point of view. So anyway, we'll be talking about it and its kind of version of sexy television in an upcoming episode, but it would be probably good if people have access to Stars to take a look at it so that you'll have more context when we get to talking about it.
It sounds like Game of Thrones for ladies.
I think that's an appropriate comparison.
All right. Well, our producer is Anne Hepperman. Our managing producer is Joel Meyer. Andy Bowers is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. The XX Gabfest is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at iTunes.com/ Panoply. If you want to know more about the show, go to our show page, slate.com/XX. Facebook page is facebook.com/XXGabFest. Or you can always email us comments and suggestions at XXGabFest@slate.com and subscribe on iTunes so that other people can learn about our show. Thank you for June and Noreen. I'm Hannah Rosen, and we will get together with you in 2 weeks.